Okay. We are looking at the conversion of Cornelius and his household. And as we've been focusing on this study into all the world, talking about sharing the gospel with other people, there are some things that, you know, this particular lesson has really brought to mind and caused us to really take some good hard looks at, you know, some of the things that we particularly might have struggles with other people and so forth. You know, this whole idea of, you know, taking the gospel to the Gentiles, that's a difficult situation, and that's where we're looking at. That was something that called upon Peter to have to really take a good hard look at where he was and what he was, you know, what he was believing and understanding and so forth. So we're looking at part three, the minister willing to share life. Okay, that's where we're picking up this morning. Is there any more of the study guide? Has somebody got a study guide you can share with John and Suzanne if you got
one?
You got an extra one?
Okay.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay. So we look at Peter, and we were talking a little bit about this last week, this whole incident of, you know, Peter, his experience with, you know, God letting him know that he's ready for the gospel to be spread to all men. And this statement that it has on here, Peter was a disciple of Jesus. He wanted men to know his Lord, to accept his Savior. He did not understand that God wanted all men to have life, but he was willing to learn, and once he had learned, he was willing to share the gift of Christ's life. So again, let's go back and talk a little bit about, we've already talked about this some, but let's go back and talk about it some more, this background. As a Jew, what was Peter's background regarding Gentiles? What's going on here? And why is this such a difficult thing for Peter?
They're unclean.
Okay, they're basically unclean people. Okay, you've got two groups of people in the world, right? Who are they? You got Jews and Gentiles, okay? That's it. There's nobody else, okay? And so Jews were clean and Gentiles were unclean. And from the Jewish perspective, you stayed away from Gentiles, okay? You avoided them like you did the plague, all right? You didn't have anything to do with them. In fact, when Peter goes to Cornelius' house after he gets this message from the Lord, what's the first thing that he says to Cornelius? Anybody recall?
I'm not supposed to be here.
Yeah, he says, you know it's against our law for a Jew to enter the home of a Gentile. Okay? So he just, you know, right off the bat, he's establishing that, okay, we've got this barrier here that has been between us all along up until now. Okay? And that barrier is getting ready to come down. Okay? So, again, let's go back and review how did Peter come to this understanding? And you know, then let's kind of relate that to ourselves. How did Peter get to this point where he's able to go to Cornelius' house and actually enter the home of this Gentile? Okay, a pretty powerful message, wasn't it? Okay, what happened to him?
The vision.
In the vision, the sheep came down.
Okay.
With meat in it. Or
okay, all kinds of, animals.
That Peter said, well, he, you know, they were unclean. After God had told him to kill and eat, he
okay.
said, so they unclean.
Yeah.
And God told him, what I have, you know, clean, do not reject.
Yeah. Okay. Basically. Nothing unclean has passed these lips. You see? His Peter's, you know, that's kind of, you know, his thing, right? It ain't going to happen. I'm not eating anything unclean. Why, and this is an important factor here, why such a concern, not just by Peter, but by all the Jews, of touching or eating, you know, or having to do with anything unclean. Why was that such a big deal to them?
It goes back to Leviticus. It goes back to when they came out of Egypt.
Okay.
The thing that they were exposed to by the Egyptians at that time.
Okay.
You know, the Lord didn't want them doing those things.
Okay.
He wanted them and he made a list of all the animals and birds that they could and could not eat.
Okay.
And he made that very clear. And Peter knew this.
Okay.
And even though he wasn't back there, when he first came out of Egypt.
Right.
Well,
he knew the law. He knew history, knew the law. Okay. But why, though? What was the big concern that they had? Tom?
They have to become clean. They have to go through the process.
Okay, yeah. If they, you know, if they touched or they, you know, ate the wrong thing, what have you, then they in themselves would be unclean. Yeah. Now, what did that mean to the Jews?
Not fit for the kingdom.
Okay, not fit for the kingdom, but also you can just, the whole idea, you couldn't even worship God. You were excluded from, you know, worship, excluded from everything else. And you were also excluded even from your own family members. Because if you were unclean, you see, and you touched one of your family members, then
they
became unclean. It was like this, you know, contagious disease. Yeah. And so you're right. The law, very specifically, God pointed out certain things. If this happened, then this is what you had to do in order to become clean again. Now understand that generally speaking, that meant ceremonially clean or unclean. So as long as they were unclean, you see, then they could not participate in, you know, sacrifices or any of those kind of things except those sacrifices designated to make them clean. You see? And so they had to stay away from everybody, you know, just a whole list. Go through Leviticus, and there's just all kinds of regulations, you see, on what you had to do, what could make you unclean, and what you had to do if you became unclean. But it all basically comes down to their standing before God. You see? So, you know, we have to understand it in that way. You know, that was God's design, okay? But it was for a purpose, because what was God's original plan from the beginning concerning salvation? That all men should be saved, right? So this whole thing of, you know, staying away from Gentiles was not intended to be a all-time, you know, from now until eternity kind of a thing, was it? But there was a purpose in it. Under that old law, that's how they were to live. They were to be separate. God called these people up to be a separate nation, a separate people for Him. See? And that was part of the reason for this separation, for this whole idea of people being unclean. So, you know, when we look at Peter in this particular, you know, at this particular time, understand that he's going back to all this history and all the interpretations of the laws and the applications of the laws, you know, for all of these, you know, couple thousand years, you see. And now God is telling him, get up, Peter, kill and eat. You see? Not a real simple thing, you know, to just all of a sudden change. Because you're talking about not only his historical background, his culture, but you're talking about his religious beliefs. Everything for them was all mixed in together. They were all one and the same. And that's what Peter knew. And now God is calling upon him to change his mind. it changed his understanding of what, you know, who's unclean and who's not, you see. So God gives him this vision, and Peter struggles with this thing, doesn't he? Okay? We oftentimes like to say, you know, how many times does God have to tell us something before we should, you know, accept it? One time, right? You say, how many times did he have to tell Peter this?
Three times,
you say. Finally, Peter got the message. But the interesting thing about this is, when Peter went to Cornelius' house, did he really understand why he was there to begin with? No, he didn't. What did he do when he got there?
I'm not supposed to be here.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to be here, but what? But God, you know, gave me this message. Why did you send for me? You see? And it wasn't until after Cornelius tells him about what happened with him, you see, then perhaps at that point, at least in my mind, what I see is the dots are connected here for Peter. You see? Oh, okay, that's what those sheets were all about, you know, full of those animals and so forth. And so he goes into Cornelius' house and he begins to teach him and to preach the gospel to him about the answering what Cornelius was inquiring about. So this question, the second one on this particular section, how did God teach Peter to consider the Gentiles as a, I want to focus on this fit audience for the gospel. Okay? And let's talk about that in terms of us. Because the next question, as you look down here, how did Peter react to the vision at first and then at last? What can I learn from the vision? From Peter's reaction. What about this whole idea of people being seen as fit to receive the gospel? Do we have a problem with that today?
I think sometimes we want to, by looking at a person, determine on whether they should hear the gospel or not. We make excuses, well, this person is too hard-hearted and they'll never accept it, or the life that they live is never going to change.
Okay.
But God is saying, I brought that person to you and you need to do what I want you to be doing. You need to teach them about me.
Okay.
It's not up to you to judge. It's up to me.
Okay.
But we do this.
Okay.
We have a preconceived notion of people have to look a certain part or act a certain way before we even would approach them.
All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rick.
The film we watched last year, Danny, he was prejudged. This guy, he's heavily into drugs. He will never, in fact, he said, I'll never come to church.
Yeah.
And but she kept on praying for him. And she said, there, you will. You will meet the Lord one day. You'll need the Lord one day. But if anybody in our society would be in that category, we certainly have them around us today, and we would tend to probably be like the world, but it's not going to be fertile. In that life, the gospel will not be fertile. And that film really brought that out.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Last week I laid out a challenge before you, those of you who are here, laid out a challenge for you as far as on our prayer list. A fellow by the name of Bill Maher. Okay. Those of you who weren't here, you know who Bill Maher is. He's a quote-unquote comedian, has a program on HBO, and, you know, he is an avowed atheist, you know, is an enemy of God. Last week I laid out the challenge to this church to pray for him. When I did that, what were some of your thoughts initial thoughts about that?
Anybody but him.
Okay.
Is he kidding me?
Okay. Chuck?
Can you make a comment in light of the season? What greater fighter for God would there be if he works in this heart?
Yeah. See, I have to admit to you that when, you know, last Wednesday, when Rick and Ted and I were talking about that whole thing, you know, we got on to talking about the situation, and Rick is the one that mentioned this idea that Terry Rush and his son, you know, somewhere, I don't remember exactly where it was, but somewhere, you know, they had encountered this whole situation, and that's something that Terry Rush and his son decided they were going to start praying for him. And when Rick mentioned that to me, I have to admit to you, my first immediate thought was, you know? And then it kind of quickly turned, you know, to, yeah, that's a good idea. You see? But what I'm saying is that I had that Peter thought here, even for just a moment. You know, wait a minute, he's unclean. Well, why would we want to pray for him? He's an enemy of God. He's an avowed enemy of God. That's exactly the point. You see? That's exactly the point. You see, he doesn't fit, does he? What we typically would think about in terms of praying for someone. And I wonder how many other people just don't fit. You say, Tammy?
I think initially when you said that, it was like there's this immediate wall that goes up because when you hear or you heard him speak,
yeah.
It's so painful.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You almost have to get rid of that wall because you had to yeah. Confess to the Lord. You have to get rid of that in order to pray. And that's real hard because in
yeah.
Life, we put these walls up when people hurt us or we hear something that, you know, offensive. And so that was my initial, like,
okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So why is he asking us to do something so difficult? You say? Yeah, it is. It's kind of like that wall. Now, let me ask you this. You know, and you don't have to raise your hand. How many of you have been praying for Bill Maher this past week? Okay. Has it been tough? Has it been tough to do that? I know for myself, it's kind of like each time I prayed about it, and I'm going, well, I wonder if the Lord's going to do anything with this. You know, see, I'm still, what I'm admitting to you is I'm still struggling with, you know, him fitting into this thing. See? Let me get Ray over here first, and then Rick.
I wasn't here last week, but my thinking with him, you know, why not him? He really needs prayer.
Sure he does.
We all do. And I always like to put the shoe on my foot. Forget myself. Somebody at one time had to pray for me that I was showing up a sinner and doing all kinds of stuff. Oh yeah, I believed in the Lord, but still I wasn't at home yet.
Yeah.
You know? And this guy really needs it. It's bad. Well, you know, I don't want you to even need to say, well, I don't want you praying for me. Too bad, buddy. You will get some praise.
You see, it really comes down to where what we have to do is, as the phrase goes, we've got to think outside the box. And that's way outside the box, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? You know, so that's the challenge. But you know, as I put that challenge before this church, understand that I've challenged myself with it first, you know, because it is a challenge. You see. But I'm going to keep praying for him, and I'm challenging you to keep praying for him. Let's tear down those walls. Let's break outside that box, and let's see what God's going to do. Rick?
The early church was shocked and dumbfounded when they found out
yeah.
Saul of Tarsus
yeah.
had become a
Christian. Exactly.
The enemy of the church standing there smiling, holding their coats when they were stoning Stephen.
Yes.
And so, yes, God can use people like Saul of Tarsus and Bill Maher.
Can you imagine what would be going on in a church assembly, okay, in the Lord's church one day, if somebody brought Bill Maher to church with them one Sunday morning? What would be going through the minds of the folks in that church? Probably a lot similar to what was going through Ananias' mind when God sent him to the house of Judas on Straight Street, right? You know, what is he doing here? You see? John?
I hear this will work a lot, but I think our nature is the one to go for the low-hanging fruit.
Okay.
The things that are easiest to get to, the things we think we'll have the most success with, those are the ones we tend to concentrate on.
Okay.
But I think it's a challenge for us to do that. I mean, I think of Colonel Kelly, and when you think of the like the party leaders there in China, how likely are you to think of them as converting to Christianity, you know, and announcing it publicly? It's like the same type of thing. You know, do we start praying for those people, or do we go for the ones we think we can easily reach? Yeah.
Let me follow up with something that you're saying here. You said the ones we think we can have the most success with. What's wrong with that concept?
The we.
You know, it's what we can have success with, instead of understanding and looking at it from the perspective of what God can do, say, and what success he can have with somebody. But yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think we tend to do that. You say, what's the path of least resistance kind of a thing? You say, okay. So, you know, it causes us, hopefully, to take a good hard look at ourselves and to see, what do I need to do to expand my box here? To think outside the box and to reach outside the box. You say, what kinds of things do I need to recognize that maybe I've been looking at as being unclean or unfit that I need to start looking at the possibilities? Now, look at part number 4 on here, the message, revealing the Prince of Life. Now, you know, look over here at Cornelius and the message that Peter was sharing with him. Cornelius had a need, right? He needed the gospel message. Peter had it. So, you know, as the author here puts this, you know, God brought them together. And as Peter spoke the gospel, Cornelius was introduced to the Prince of Life and was invited by the Lord to receive the remission of his sins, that is, the gift of life. What did Peter say about Jesus? Okay, go over to Acts chapter 10, and can I get somebody to read for us verses 34 through 43? Who wants to read that text for us? Acts chapter 10, beginning in verse 34 through 43. All right, Lynette, go ahead.
And Peter opened his mouth and said, "In truth I perceive that God shows no partiality, but in every nation whoever fears him and works righteousness is accepted by him. The word which God sent to the children of Israel, preaching peace through Jesus Christ, he is Lord of all. That word you know, which was proclaimed throughout all Judea and began from Galilee after the baptism which John preached. For God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and with power, who went about doing good and healing all who were oppressed by the devil, for God was with him. And we are witnesses of all things which he did, both in the land of the Jews and in Jerusalem, whom they killed by hanging on a tree. Him God raised up on the third day and showed him openly, not to all the people, but to witnesses chosen before by God, even to us who ate and drank with him after he arose from the dead. And he commanded us to preach to the people and to testify that it is he who was ordained by God to be judge of the living and the dead. To him all the prophets witnessed that through his name whoever believes in him will receive remission of sins."
Okay. Now, the focus of this particular part is, what specifically are the things that Peter told Cornelius and his household about Jesus? What do you see in this text? What did he tell him?
He's Lord of all.
Okay, he's Lord of all.
No respect.
I'm sorry, what?
No respect of persons.
Okay, what else? Lynette? Okay, what else did he tell him?
He went around doing good.
Okay, he did lots of good. He was healing people. What else did he tell him?
Raised from the dead.
Okay, but before he got raised from the dead, what happened to him? Okay, he was hung on a tree. He was crucified. Then God raised him from the dead. What else did he tell them about him?
Showed him off.
Seen by all these people, witnessed by all these people, and so forth. Some of us even ate with him. What else did he tell them about him?
Gave commands to go preach to the people.
Okay. All right. What else?
And if we were a witness to all of that.
Okay. All right, but there's one other really important, significant thing that he told about Jesus here to him.
That he was ordained by God.
Okay. Thank you. You're going to be judged by this Jesus, you say. Okay. All of these different things that Cornelius needed to know about Jesus. Up until this point, what did Cornelius know in terms of religion? What are we told about Cornelius? Do what, Stephen? He was a devout man. Okay, God-fearing. He took care of the poor and so forth. He believed in God, but he didn't know Jesus, did he? And so Peter, just like somebody else that we talked about earlier, preached unto him Jesus. Remember Philip. Got to the Ethiopian eunuch. Began at Isaiah 53, the text that he was reading, and it says he preached unto him Jesus. You say? And Peter goes to Cornelius' house, and what does he do? Preaches unto him Jesus. He introduces Cornelius and all his household to Jesus. Now, next question. How many folks are in your Jerusalem that don't know Jesus? Now, that's a tricky question, isn't it? Because most people, at least, you know, here in America, have heard of Jesus, right? Because most of them celebrate Christmas. Okay? So most people have heard about Jesus. So it's really difficult to find somebody today who hasn't at least heard about Jesus, and it's even difficult to find someone who doesn't claim at least to believe in Jesus.
They don't know him.
Bingo. They don't know him. And probably, I would say that there's several of these things that Peter has pointed out to Cornelius and his household, several of these things about Jesus that they don't know. And in particular, one thing that they're at least not really focusing on is the fact that one day they're going to be judged by him. So, the issue here is, do you know people in your Jerusalem who still need to know these things about Jesus? John?
A little confusion on that part. I've always pictured that on judgment, Christ is the one interceding for us before God, and God is the one doing judgment.
Right.
So, is it only the Jews that are being, or the Gentiles are being judged by Jesus?
I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work.
Because they're one and the same. It's kind of
that's the problem, you see. Because certainly, and we've talked about this before, is the picture that we have of the judgment is that Jesus, as John talks about in 1 John, is our advocate, right, who speaks to the Father in our defense. He's our defense attorney But yet there is this and other places that the scriptures indicate that Jesus is going to judge the world, but also says we're going to. So, you know, I just have to be honest with you. I don't know how he's going to make all that work.
I wonder if it's more of we're going to be judged by our reception and how we take him, the way we act because of him.
Perhaps so. At the very least, what we need to understand from it is his words that we are going to be judged by. You see, the teachings of Jesus, the words of Jesus, that will be the standard that we are judged by. So you know, we really, and again, you know, this whole study is intended to challenge us, you know, not only in our thinking, but in our actions, you know, to really look at, okay, what do I need to be doing here? Are there people in my Jerusalem who don't know Jesus this way? I need to be sharing him with them. See? The last question on this page, why did Peter preach to Cornelius about Jesus instead of other doctrines that Cornelius would need to know about the church? Yeah. And that's a challenge for us oftentimes, because, you know, sometimes our focus gets kind of going in the wrong direction, where we tend to focus more on the church than we do on Jesus. See? And we get real concerned about, you know, whether or not someone's in the church and have they done all the things they need to do to get in the church. And the real issue needs to be, you need to be in Christ, you see. Because once you're in Christ, then you're automatically added to the church, you see. And so sometimes we need to change our focus that way and focus on teaching people about Jesus and let them get to know him, you see, in that way. John?
I've known people whose focus was all about baptism.
Yeah.
It wasn't about teaching about Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, we were talking about that very thing in our elders meeting this morning, you know, in this whole thing of evangelism, the focus that we're trying to do, and the idea of helping people to get to know the Lord, you know, and doing the follow-up and so forth, and instead of just bringing people, you know, to a certain point where, you know, we've taught them these certain steps and we get them baptized and then we move on, we've got to help them to grow to know the Lord. And that's what it's really all about. So.
Don't you think sometimes, too, we get caught on that, on baptism, because they see a person who says, I believe, and they go through everything, but they don't think baptism is necessary. So then you end up focusing on that, mm-hmm. and then that's the only thing they hear.
Yeah.
But you can't go 1, 2, 4, 5. According to what we know that is accepted of us in obedience, you know, along with doing,
right.
You grow into the of influencing other people, because he was, by him becoming a Christian and being baptized and so forth, he set an example to the unbelievers, not just in baptism, but he set them all. And so that's,
right.
And I think that's how we get so hung up in other people's mind, because we say, no, 1, 2, and
right.
And then
these steps,
and four,
right.
They're all important. But why do we, because we get hung up on them trying to explain to them why that's just as important as leading a good life and so forth, but obedience to that one is one that we always have a
right.
problem with the people, and they get hung up on that, saying, well, you're saying if I'm not baptized, then I'm going to hell.
Right.
And you only read the scriptures to them.
Right.
It doesn't come out
yeah.
of your mouth, but that's what they come to. And it's a hard road there to
yeah.
know, do I just, okay, I just accept what they said, you know, I don't think it's necessary, you know. Do we just go on and
right.
go on to something else?
Yeah, I think that there is this, you know, this big resistance to that whole thing. There are those who, you know, it's, you know, look, all you have to do is believe and you're saved. Baptism is something you do later. And, of course, from our perspective, we look and say, no, you've got to be baptized in order to be saved. So there's already naturally this, you know, confrontation that's set up. I don't think that we need to just accept, you know, that and go, well, okay, you know, that's, but I think what we have to do is sometimes it's best to take the tension away and just focus on, again, like you say, what does the Scriptures teach? And then it over time, with a lot of folks, it brings them around to the point where they've been studying, they've been hearing it and so forth, and they're going, you know, I think you're right about this thing. I need to get baptized here, you see, rather than just trying to shove it down their throat and getting stuck on that one issue that just leaves the wall there, and then we never get anywhere with them, you see. If we just kind of, you know, hey, okay, well, let's just kind of, you know, let's go with studying here, and hopefully along the line they will see the truth about it, and they'll come. If they don't, you know what, that's, you know, they're going to stand before God, okay? All I can do is I'm going to teach them the truth. But we do have to be careful about how we go about that at times, that we're not just standing there doing battle with someone over this issue, and we lose sight of, you know, the real picture here. And I think that's why, you know, the emphasis here is let's focus on Jesus here. You know, let's share Jesus with them. And hopefully over time, to the person that has that, you know, that particular barrier, they'll come to a better understanding of what the Scriptures are teaching about those things. You see, Colonel?
One of the things that we learned very quickly is that we don't have to explain everything and get them to agree to everything immediately.
Right.
You know, we had several people come to us who said they're Christian, and, you know, in the context of China, it's very important to encourage someone,
right,
when they show the boldness to say, I'm a Christian,
yeah,
rather than sitting there down, oh, you claim to be a Christian. Well, how did you become a Christian?
Right.
Well, see, you didn't do this one, so
right,
actually,
you got two more hoops to jump through. Yeah. Right.
So,
yeah,
you know, bureaucracy. We never compromise any part of what the Bible says when it comes to salvation.
Right.
But at the same time, we realize if I share the Bible with someone, we're going to talk about baptism.
Right.
It doesn't go away.
Right.
I mean, every time you look at the Bible, you just see that baptism in one,
yeah,
book or another, you know, and I don't have to convince the person in that moment,
right,
that that's what they need to do. If we just study the Bible, like you said, focus on Jesus,
yeah,
you know, the Bible's going to speak for itself.
Yeah.
And you choose your moments to bring up the subject again, to kind of test the waters, to see where they are. See if they're still heavily resistant to the idea, or if they're starting to become a little bit softer towards it. And, you know, eventually they will see, because of because they have a willingness,
yeah,
to listen to,
yeah,
the Bible.
Yeah, if they're sincere and they're wanting to find the truth, they're going to,
yeah,
do that. Let me give you an example here. We got a few more minutes here. You know, I give you a perfect example of a family that we've had visiting with us is Warren and Flossie's now. You know, they've been visiting with us for a couple of months, and, you know, Cindy and I had them over for dinner just before Christmas, and we had a good talk with them, and our conversation focused on two major things. One was baptism, and the other was once saved, always saved, you know. And that's where they're at, you see, with those things. They still come. In fact, I got a phone call from Flossie yesterday. Okay, said, just want to let you guys know we're in South Carolina for the weekend. We're not going to be there with you guys tomorrow at worship. Now, what does that tell you about these folks? You see? You know, do they have it all down correct? No. No. Okay? But you know, is it going to do a whole lot of good? You know, we sat there, you know, at our dining room table, you know, talking about this for quite a long time. And you know, they got some pretty firm, you know, stand on some of these things, but I'm not going to sit there and argue with them and say, well, you know, look, if y'all don't get this together, you know, then you're going to have to find another place to worship. You know, no. We, you know, they're here because they're hearing things and they're seeing things that is causing them to think a lot. You see? And that's what we need to be looking at, is those kinds of things. And, you know, eventually I hope that, you know, we'll have more opportunity to sit and study and talk, or who knows? You know, they may one day come and say, hey, you know what? I'll talk to you about this. I don't know. But that's where we've got to let God do his work. You see, that's the point. You see, this is God's work. And we just got to be doing his work and allow him to work on people.
I'm speaking from somebody that wasn't raised in the church and always searching. And nothing convinced me more than to be encouraged to read the Bible for myself. And when you go out there and introduce the people to Christ and then really introduce them to the Bible, because I would wager to say that 85% of the people may have a Bible, but they very seldom open it up.
Right.
If you can get them to really study the Bible with you, there isn't that many words you got to have. The Bible will convict them or will push them away, whichever, you know, the people are receptive to.
Yeah.
A lot of them will say, well, whatever the Bible requires of you is too much for me, and they'll go back off. But if people are really searching for Christ and want to please him, the Bible will convict them.
Yeah.
Not all of the fancy words you're saying. It's the Bible that will convict them.
Absolutely. Okay. We're out of time. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to finish this last section real quickly next week. There's a couple of things I want to talk about, and we're not going to spend a tremendous amount of time on all this. But I want to finish this section 5 on here next week, and I have lesson 7 here for you. I'm going to put these over on the podium, pick one of these up, and we will finish this section and then start on lesson 7 next week. All right? Okay. All right. Thank you all very much.